The changes have already begun. Our fields have turned to gold, and in the trees, we can see a little bit of orange, red, and yellow. This hour, we'll get the fall color forecast. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh will be here, and we'll talk about fall color. Why leaves change color, what conditions lead to the most vibrant shades, and where to go in Iowa for the most spectacular color. Then Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran will join the conversation, and he and Mark will answer your questions. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it's been an unusual fall weather-wise. But rain or shine, hot or cool, fall color does come. It just may not be as spectacular or long-lasting under less than ideal conditions. In a few minutes, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Duran will be here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. But we're going to start with fall color and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Always great to be here.
And now here we are in the first week of October. This is typically the week that we start seeing a lot of color up north in Iowa, right?
Especially if you look at the historical information and information out there in general for northern Iowa, we usually say last week of September through the second week of October. Well, we're in the first week of October, and talking to folks up that way, I talked to a good friend, Bruce Blair, who's our area forester for Yellow River State Forest, and he just said, blah.
Just blah. Are the leaves turning, or are they?
Yeah, there's some color. There's, you know, the typical speckling of the maples are starting to come. The one thing I asked him, though, was about the yellows. Usually with the yellows tend to come first. So, mm-hmm. like our green ash tends to have some vibrant, our cottonwoods in the bottoms, our silver maples. And what I'm noticing around here in eastern Iowa is because of the dryness we had over the last month or so, now we're starting to get a little rain, but it's been really dry the last month or two. I'm seeing a lot of edge browning and just leaves kind of falling.
Right.
And
yeah, we've got a giant ash tree right outside our house, and some falls, it's this really amazing yellow,
bright
orange.
Yellow. Yep.
It's so
yep.
beautiful. And this fall, it just sort of went brown. And this morning, I noticed with the heavy fog that a lot of the leaves were falling, but we haven't had a display at all.
I use my neighborhood as a good barometer, I guess, and I walk early in the mornings, and this morning with my little bike light walking down the sidewalk, there are a lot of leaves on the ground already. And in our neighborhood, like with the ash, we've been picking up leaves probably for 3 weeks now. And so, but I still think there's hope. There's a lot of green out there. There's a lot of potential, I think, for the maples. You know, the oaks always bring it home, you know, over the next couple of weeks. It's just if we get the right conditions. But I know the sumac, like up in the north and in around here, are really starting to show. And then we often forget about the vines. Virginia creeper usually has a brilliant red, and we can see that right now. So amongst that green, sometimes that red pops along the trees. But that red can also be poison ivy.
Right,
there's
right.
a lot of poison ivy out there, but it has
a
beautiful
fall. It makes it so much easier to spot.
Right, but it has a beautiful fall color. And a quick ID for people, and I work a lot with woodland owners and stuff. If you have a vine right now that's turning kind of purple-red, but it has lateral branches coming off it, these big branches coming off the vine towards you, and you see these big leaves, that is poison ivy. Our other native vines, like wild grape, Virginia creeper, they don't have these large lateral branches coming off. So that's a good ID characteristic this time of year. You can see that, see the color. But so I think there's hope. But, you know, a couple weeks ago, everyone was talking about, it's going to be early. It's going to be early.
Right.
You know, this fall color is just going to go flying through. And then all of a sudden, screech, everything kind of stopped. Again, I think the dryness kind of does that.
Well, we've got this big weekend of rain predicted today and tomorrow, pretty much all over the state. So that was my other concern. If leaves are starting to change, are we just going to lose a lot of them over the weekend and not even get much of a show?
We're going to lose some of those. Again, back to the yellows. Other ones, the black walnut, elms, hackberries are starting to turn. I talked about the silver maple, not the sugar maple. The silver maple turned yellow. Honey locust is another one that turns yellow. I like the yellow. I mean, I love the others, but I like those early yellows too. So I think with these weather conditions, and even this morning riding my bike to work, I used that as that path as a brand. There were a lot of leaves falling with these winds. So I think we're going to lose some of that.
All right. So not a very yellow autumn, but we could see more of the burgundies, reds, and other colors later
on. I still think there's hope for those. And we talk about this every year. What is a peak? Mm-hmm. You know, I think the peak is your definition of what you like, because early on we get the yellows and then we get the sugar maples, the hard maples up in the uplands. And mixed in there is also the white ash. Over the last week or two, you see these purple spots up in the woods, and that's the white ash that turns purple versus the green ash that turns yellow. The green ash is on the bottom lands. The white ash is on the uplands, and that gives us some purples and stuff. But I even noticed some of those are kind of that kind of brownish, purple, whatever. But, again, we have these kind of two peaks. I was talking to Bruce Blair again yesterday to kind of get the update of what's going on up there. And the two peaks are, you know, you get the yellows and the sugar maples, and then that kind of rises, and then you get the oaks and some of the hickories. So you get the reds of the red oak, the purples of the white oak, and then you get some yellows of bitternut hickory and yellows and browns of shagbark hickory. So we've got some tiers left. We're at the start, but I think, you know, as we always talk about, we need a couple things. We need some clear days, which we don't have in the forecast for the next couple days, and we need cool nights. We're having cool nights. But to get the good reds and stuff, you need clear days, because those clear days, that sun produces the sugars in the leaves. And when it gets cool at night, those sugars get trapped. And the pigment called anthocyanin gets produced in those trapped sugars. And that's where we get those vibrant reds and stuff. And so unless we get some of that, and I've noticed, you know, again, 4 weeks ago we were talking about the stressed maples, some turning red already and stuff like that. And looking at some of the red maples and the hybrid maple, there's a hybrid maple between silver and red that we see a lot in our communities, often called autumn blaze, that people have planted for the last 10 years. That's usually this real vibrant, vibrant red. It's kind of a huey red, kind of a brownish huey red. But I was in one street that they have the whole street planted, and last night on the way home before dark, I noticed, hey, these don't look too bad. So as we always talk about, it can be regional, spotty, but don't give up hope. I think over the next 2 weeks, everyone's talking about that's when things, I think, could really start to roll. And it looks like the extended forecast, maybe temperatures are going to start to drop a little bit. A lot of this, though, is triggered by day length. The days are definitely getting shorter. So things are starting to kind of be ready. And a lot of it's going to depend on the weather conditions.
Well, and I know a lot of people are not very excited about the rain over the weekend. It's such a great time of year to be out and about outside. So many activities, but we really need this rain, right? I was going to ask you, I mean, we did see some leaves turning early because of the stress, because of lack of rain. It looks like we're just not going to have much of a spectacular fall color display.
Don't say that yet.
Okay, but what do we really need to be concerned about with our trees right now because of the dryness?
Especially when we talk about this, anytime we have dry falls, if you have trees that you've planted in the last 3 or 4 years, you probably should be watering those. I mean, unless, you know, in this part of the state, we're forecasting 1 inch to maybe 3 inches of rain. And if you're in an area where you get that, you probably can back off. But it's been so dry that over the next couple weeks, you know, I even saw a day, maybe Sunday, 70 degrees. I mean, that's still really warm.
Right.
I think the average is probably supposed to be down in the 60s. So if you have trees that you've planted within the last couple of years, over the next month, if it continues to stay dry, given that water once a week or so, getting it good and soaked in, giving it a couple gallons, especially if it's a new tree, just a couple gallons just around the root ball to soak those trees in. Soak them right up until we start to get really cold so that when they freeze, there's some moisture there and it's not too dry. And we always talk about new trees, trying to water them in the fall, water them in, new shrubs, stuff like that, to give them a better chance. And this is a good year where some of that kind of stuff is going to be very helpful. I'm actually working on a project next weekend. We planted some little seedlings last spring. We've had great survival, but we're going to water all those in. We're trying to give them each maybe 2 or 3 gallons to help them towards the fall.
Now, ironically, some of the problems you've been seeing lately when people call the tree man with their difficulties have been because of a moist spring. So we've had this very dry summer and a dry fall, but the water this spring has created some issues for trees. What are you seeing?
Well, this is what we call nature. This is the fun of my job. You never know what you're going to get. It's a mixed bag. Because of the wet moisture or the wet spring, and actually the last couple springs, we've had that. So we have a lot of crab apples that just don't look very good. They don't have a lot of leaves. But if you look around, there's a lot of crab apples that look like everything's okay. And the ones that don't look so good got apple scab. And we talk about that every year. But the ones that look good are very tolerant to that disease, and it's caused by a fungus. It can get on apples, but it's probably the biggest hitter on the crab apples. But that's a good sign that there is good tolerance out there. So if you're thinking about planting crab apples in the future, there are good selections that you can use that are very tolerant. So there's a lot of crab apples that really have looked very scabby since about July 4th. And then the other one is, and it kind of relates to fall color, anthracnose. We always talk about anthracnose in the spring, like on sycamores and ash, but there's also an anthracnose is a general term. There's also an anthracnose on black walnut. I noticed this morning a lot of the black walnuts have little black spots all over the leaves and stuff, and so you're losing the yellow, and that's caused by a fungus. Just as it is with the ash and the sycamores, you know, these diseases aren't a major concern. They're not going to kill the trees, but like for fall color and the yellow of the walnuts, because anthracnose, some of those leaves are falling. Then the other big one, and this goes out to my great friend, Dr. Jeff Isles over in Ames. He's probably in a meeting. Well, he is in a meeting today because we tried to get him on the radio, but needle cast on blue spruce, Jeff. Blue spruce. They don't look good. There's a lot of lower branches starting to die up. There's a needle cast that we see every year. And because of these wet springs, there's a lot of unhealthy blue spruce out there, Dr. Isles.
Is he a big proponent of blue spruce?
Oh, we have a few heavy discussions if we should plant it or not. That could be for another day when he joins us, actually.
A little I told you so from Mark Vitas, right, as we go to a break here. We'll be back in just a moment. You can join the conversation on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, DNR Forester Mark Vitas, and joining us now, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And, of course, you can join the conversation with your questions about the plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I'm going to start with an acorn question for you, Mark. This is from Tashi in Iowa City, and her mom sent us an email a couple of weeks ago asking about a white oak tree and how to plant the acorns so that they could be a memento for the students at their elementary school. And they've opened up some of these acorns, and they have pink stripes on sort of the inside nut, and Tashi wants to know what that's about.
I really think what she's seeing is that that's the outer portion of the embryo of the seed. And I think when the air exposes, you get a different pigment color. And I think that that's pigment color that they're seeing as that starts to get exposed. But as long as that lateral root is coming out, they're good to go. And I heard that show, and of course, I was probably in the truck yelling at the radio and stuff, which I tend to do. Not yelling, talking to the back to the radio, but no one can ever hear me. But the neat thing about white oaks is the reason that they're putting their root, and it's called a radicle, is actually coming out this time of year is because white oaks tend to grow in our uplands in those drier conditions. So how better way to take advantage of the spring rains by putting your root down in the fall, so when the spring rains do come, you are ready to grow. And the red oaks don't tend to have to do that because they tend to grow on the north and east exposures that are usually better moisture, cooler environments, so they can save that energy, put their root in the spring, and still have the moisture. So it's an adaptation of those different species to the conditions that they grow in.
That's fascinating. All right. Well, Tashi, thank you for your question. Here's another one on a tree. This one's from Sarah. We have a large sugar maple tree in our front yard. There was once a large limb that fell long before we moved into this house. Now there's a large hole in the trunk where the limb once was. Previous owners filled it with concrete. But that is now gone. What can we do to patch this large hole and keep our tree? I'm worried that the tree will die.
Well, the good news is the tree will not die from the hole. The hole indicates there's very probably significant decay in that tree. And the thing to remember about decay does not attack live tissue. And on most trees, the live tissue is just a couple inches underneath the bark. So you have that piping system underneath the bark that keeps the tree alive. We've all seen hollow trees and the little grandchild sitting in the hollow tree waving at everybody, but that tree is still alive. That's because the cavity or that outer portion, that 1 or 2 inches, is all that tree needs to live, which is kind of amazing in itself. The bad news is if a tree is hollow, has a lot of decay, then we're concerned about the structural integrity of that tree. So a lot of it's going to come to depend on where the location of that tree is and how much decay is in that tree. If that tree is out in the yard, away from everything, I just let it go and realize that the tree's going to live. Now, because there's decay, there could be other issues, and they could continue to lose branches over time and have decline. It's never a good sign, but that itself is not going to kill. Now, if that tree is close to the sidewalk, to the house,
where you park your car,
then you really need to get a certified arborist or an arborist to look at that tree to see if it's a major risk. And if there's enough decay there, they may have to decide to take that tree down.
All right. And putting concrete in a hole, not necessary?
No.
You know, that was done for
very
years.
Very succinct, Richard.
And the thing to remember is, if people will even get out there with a wet vac and suck all the moisture out of there, and then now people will put like foam, like insulation foam in there to seal that shut. The thing is, decay likes dark, moist conditions.
You're actually creating a perfect environment.
They don't need the light. They need those kind of cool, moist conditions that get humid inside there. And so the decay is just going to continue. And if you look at most of those, the ones I like the best is when they put the bricks. You know, they actually layered the bricks.
Brick it up, yep.
Yep, pretty, pretty. But you notice on the edges, often you see the cement, and then there's a gap, because the decay continued, and that shows you that that did not stop the decay.
Plus, so, Jim Pease is not on this show, but he would point out that that's a great habitat.
It is. My neighborhood owls love those kind of trees. Again, let's worry about safety, though. Let's have that tree evaluated to see if it's in a location where it's a risk. Again, if it's out where it can just kind of be itself, if it fails, it fails.
All right.
Could live for years.
Here's a question for you, Richard, from Nikki. I have some Queen Anne's lace and some red clover in my yard. What's the best product to use to get rid of those weeds, and what time of year should I be treating them?
As far as broadleaf weeds like dandelion, clover, whatever, fall is the best time. You basically want to do it sometime between late September, early November, plenty of time. I would just use a general broadleaf herbicide, apply that once. Now, certain things like violets, are pretty tough, and so you may have to put on a second application. But in general, one application should be fine, and you have plenty of time to do it.
All right. Here's a question from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. I get an annual carpet of acorns and often resort to using a snow shovel to deal with them. Is there something else I can do with all of these acorns? Can I make some sort of food or preserve from them? Is some other way to get something useful out of them?
Depending on the species, you can look up. There are, you can actually, you have to soak them and get the tannins out, but there is a substance that you can make that's almost like flour.
And you can do some
baking with that. But you have to look up depending on the species and stuff. The other thing is, maybe consider getting some strawberry boxes and putting them in the strawberry boxes and laying them out for our friendly squirrels so they don't have to run around as much. The other thing is, if they have a small garden or something like that, they could spread them out and cover them up a little bit and maybe grow a few new ones so they can start to place new ones in other places. So I think there's a lot of potential there. Or get a few buckets if they want to spread the wealth of oaks, which is a great thing. Get a few buckets, put soil in them now, stick them in the garden, put those acorns there. Richard always talks about putting some mesh on top of those so that the squirrels can't dig them out, but actually put them at ground level, let them go through their cold period. They need to be cold stratified in the wintertime. Let them go through that, and then this spring you might have a few buckets of new oaks that you could give away.
Share with friends. Now,
birthday gifts,
it seems like it was a terrific acorn year. I see acorns everywhere I go this year. So a bumper crop of acorns this year?
Depending on where you're at, I will tell you, I have not seen a good acorn crop in the Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Muscatine area probably for 8 years. And this is one of the best I've seen in the last 8 years. But I've seen better in my short 17 years here.
So is anybody collecting them? I know sometimes the DNR collects acorns.
We do, and there's actually a number of collectors in eastern Iowa that collect them and sell them to nurseries, and they often sell them to our nursery. And myself, I've been collecting. I've had people give me some, and I get them to our state forest nursery over in Ames. We have a few collection centers, often at our state forest, where we'll take black walnuts and we'll also take acorns depending on the season. So, yes, we're taking advantage. There's some great tools out there. There's a new tool. Well, it's not a new. We've had it for years. It's called Bag-a-Nut, and it looks like the old yard sweepers, and it's basically a bunch of plastic wheels all pressed together, and they're about a half. There's a quarter inch to a half inch gap depending on the size of acorn. You can run that across the lawn. They get caught in there, and there's little springs that kick it into a basket in the front, and we can collect 2 bushel of acorn in about 10 minutes.
Wow, and so, you need that, Stephanie. That's better than a snow shovel.
Get a bag of nut. But there's actually some little nice, really yard, and I'm not sure what they call, but they're on a stick, and they're a little roller with wires that are for picking up walnuts and acorns in your yard that you can just roll across the yard and pick them up, and then it's got a little...
Like those golf ball things.
Yep,
okay.
Yep, and then you basically just put it on a 5-gallon bucket, and it's got a little metal spring, and you put it on there, and they all fall out, and then you go to the next.
All right.
And they're probably not very expensive online.
All right, and it sounds easier than a snow shovel no matter what, and kind of fun, even. All right, here's a question from Katie in Ames. I have some snow on the mountain in my yard. I'm looking to contain it so I can plant other things nearby. It's bordered on two sides by a driveway and a very wide sidewalk. Is it possible to put in some sort of edging around it to stop it from spreading further? How deep do I have to put that edging in? How far away from the last visible plants do I need to put it in to make sure it's contained?
Basically, what they're talking about is variegated gout weed. Which is not, snow on the mountain is actually a native plant. It's an annual plant, but it's commonly called snow on the mountain because it has a variegated leaf. It's kind of a light green or kind of a cream-colored leaf. It does spread very aggressively. For that reason, it should be kind of contained. I would probably use maybe my shovel instead and just go out there periodically and dig down around the edges and make sure it can't get out. As far as something in the ground, it's probably going to have to be like a foot deep be effective. So
this is an aggressive spreader. It's very pretty.
It's very pretty, especially in the spring and early summer. It will sometimes revert back to the normal green form where it has a normal green leaf. And that species is extremely aggressive. It's a weed, definitely. So if you see some of that kind of revert back to the green form, destroy it if you can, as quickly as you can. But I would use probably a spade, maybe, or something at least a foot deep.
It's pretty shade tolerant, too, isn't it, Richard?
It is, yes.
Because I've seen it where people plant it near kind of a woodland edge in their backyards, and it will actually start to spread into the woodlands, too.
Right. So. It's a pretty aggressive plant, mm-hmm. but when it reverts back to that green form, it's terribly aggressive.
All right. So as pretty as it is and as tenacious as it is this something that you recommend against?
I'm not very fond of it, no. Just because it is kind of aggressive, invasive, and it will revert back to that green form. So I would prefer something more restrained, maybe hostas.
Well-behaved.
Yes, okay. Well-behaved. Things like hostas or ferns or something of that nature rather than that plant.
All right. Let's get to the phones. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. David is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, my wife and I were reading a book to our son the other day, and it was talking about how when the leaves fall off the tree, they don't actually fall off. The tree actually creates a protein to grow and basically snip or cut the end off. Is that true, and can you comment about that?
Great question, David. Actually, you're right. It actually produces what they call an abscission layer, and that abscission layer makes a corky substance basically between the leaf connection and the branch connection, and that starts to slow down the movement of basically the nutrients and the water, and that basically shuts off that piping system and then it allows it to abscise. But that is called the incision layer, and there is basically the temperatures and the day length tend to trigger the production of that to cause that abscission layer.
Okay, right. Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. We can all learn a thing or two from children's books, I think. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Cheryl is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I have a wonderful raspberry patch that is probably 4 or 5 years old. Sometimes when we pick the raspberries out of the patch, they're very tart and ripe ones. And sometimes when we pick the ripe ones, they are very sweet off the same patch. Why?
That could be due to weather conditions. The fruit quality can be affected by extreme heat, by drought. So basically during dry periods, I would try to water once a week and put on maybe an inch or so of water because that's basically what they need. So if they're under stress for some reason, basically heat or drought, then the fruit quality may not be as good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Cheryl. And it is interesting that can vary from place to place in a raspberry plant,
right,
or a raspberry bush.
Well, in an area, because maybe one end of the garden is drier than the other end. Maybe one is in full sun, maybe one in partial sun. So one may be hotter and drier. One portion may be a little bit cooler and more moist.
All right. Next, we've got Dwayne on the line in Griswold. Hi, Dwayne.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
My question is, I noticed my oak trees in my yard, the canopy isn't as lush as it has been. And I hear there's a blight going around. And I've driven around the countryside, and I've noticed other oak trees that's losing their leaves, or the canopy isn't as lush as it should be. And I was wondering if there's some sort of remedy for that.
Dwayne, do you know what kind of oak that you have?
Bur oaks.
Okay. So have you noticed, Dwayne, like in the last probably 5 weeks, that some of the leaves are turning brown and seem to be falling off kind of quick?
Yeah, you can see daylight through my trees.
Okay. Well, there is a newer disease called bur oak blight, or BOB for short, and it's caused by a fungus. And what part of the state is Griswold in?
Southwest.
Southwest, okay. In the western part and over this way and in the central part, we've seen this bur oak blight probably for the last 10 years. And it's really starting to pick up. The key is diagnosis. So what I would probably do is if, again, this time of year, like in the last 4 weeks, I've noticed in the Iowa City area, there's a couple trees that I know have this disease, and I've watched them, and they've really started to drop their leaves in the last 4 weeks. They have some green, but those leaves will start to fall, and the outer top of the leaf will turn kind of brown, and parts of the rest of the leaf will stay green, but they'll start to fall off. And then sometimes those trees will leave kind of brown curled up leaves on the tree through the winter, and that's how the fungus actually repopulates itself and spreads the spores the next spring. The thing I would do is if that tree is starting to lose some leaves, try to collect some of those fresh leaves fallen, take them to your county extension office so they can send them up to Ames to see if it's bur oak blight. If it's an individual tree in the yard, there are some fungicidal treatments depending on how far along your tree is that you can, they're kind of expensive, but they can be used every 2 to 3 years to try to basically put that disease in remission and give those trees a chance. So the key here is to get the diagnosis to see if it has bur oak blight. But I think that's probably your strongest possibility.
So should I take just a sample from one tree, or should I take a sample from all three of my trees in my yard?
I would try to take a sample of the ones that are most symptomatic. So if they're really starting to drop leaves and you see the top turning brown and parts of the leaf turning green or still green. The other thing is turn those leaves over. If they have little purple lesions, take those as your samples. And also if you go online through Iowa State and you Google bur oak blight, you'll find a good publication of what they'll look for.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Dwayne. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me, Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. You are welcome to join our conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go back to the phones. Anita is on the line next in West Oak. Okoboji. Hi, Anita.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a serious problem with quackgrass in my rose garden, and I have treated it a little bit this summer with a homemade concoction off social media, which is Dawn dish soap, Epsom salt, and vinegar, and I put that on, and within 24 hours, anything visible above the ground is dead, and it all comes back.
Yes.
And so that, my question is, if I continue to use this, I'm not going to make any head ground, but I'm wondering if I'm hurting the soil.
No, but you're not going to make any headway in that, yes, the vinegar will kill what you apply it to. It'll burn it, basically, burn the foliage off. But what you need to do is somehow destroy the roots and rhizomes in the ground, and the vinegar will not do that. So you basically have two options. One is to try to dig it up, where you physically dig up and remove those roots and rhizomes. That's one possibility. That's one option. The other option is to use Roundup. And what you can do in close situations where you have other plants nearby is instead of spraying it, if you have to, maybe apply it with a foam-type paintbrush, where you dip the paintbrush in your Roundup, and then you dab it on the foliage of the quackgrass. But basically, you have to destroy all the roots and rhizomes in the ground. And so this is going to be a long-term project, because no matter what you do as far as digging or using the Roundup, it's going to take time. Because if you use Roundup, for example, and you apply it, you will destroy some of the roots and some of the rhizomes. But those surviving portions will then resprout, and you'll get some more growth. And then you have to do it again. So it's going to have to be done periodically over probably a year or two. The same with digging it, where you simply dig it up periodically whenever it shows up in the area. So it's going to take some persistence.
All right, but the weed killer recipes we see online are not usually worth your time.
No, the vinegar basically just burns the foliage. And you need something, if you're going to use a herbicide, something that is systemic, that moves down into the root system and kills the root system. Vinegar doesn't do that.
All right. Anita, thanks a lot for your call. And next we'll go to Ben in Cedar Falls. Hi, Ben.
Hi there. Yeah, I harvested some pawpaw fruit in southwest Iowa this year, and I'm interested in starting the seedlings, so I was wondering if you had any advice on that, and then if you had any insights on how those seeds kind of move around. They seem to be pretty big, and I can't imagine any critters swallowing them down. But yeah, I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for your call, Ben. So starting pawpaw from seeds, Richard.
I would plant the seeds outdoors in the ground this fall. Most tree seeds need to be exposed to cool, moist conditions, and if they don't receive that, they won't germinate. And if you put them in the ground in the fall, then the weather over winter provides those conditions, and hopefully the seed should germinate next spring.
All right, and the pawpaw seems to be pretty easy to grow, doesn't it, from seed? I mean, people with pawpaw groves tend to see that they're
It should be fairly easy. And I would assume animals do move around the seeds quite a bit. The fruit is desirable, and it kind of sticks maybe, and so they move it around.
All right. Now let's do a couple email questions. This one is from Kate. No, I'm sorry. This one's from Susan in Jewel. I have a hedge of pyramidal arborvitae that is around 7 years old. Do I need to give the trees a lot of water before winter freeze? I would hate to lose them.
I don't think you have to. I think if we get the rain this weekend, that should help quite a bit. If they were younger, like 2 or 3 years, definitely I'd water them. But if they're 7 years old, if we get the rain this weekend, they probably should be okay.
All right. Here's a question from Laura. Is Mark a proponent of Norway spruce for central Iowa? Since you seem very opinionated about your spruces.
I am. Yes, I am. I am a proponent of Norway spruce. I like Norway spruce. Again, back to blue spruce. I just have because I've been back in the state since 1992, and the needle cast disease is really taking on the blue spruce and actually hits the Black Hills and the white also, but not as bad. And the good thing about the Norway so far, it doesn't appear that it has major issues with those particular needle casts. So I do like Norway spruce. The other one that some people are starting to plant, but we don't have a good idea as far as the needle cast, is Serbian spruce. But we'll have to wait a while. It actually has kind of a whitish-blue tinge to it, but it's more of a weeping, a little softer look. That has possibilities, but we have to wait and see and to see what impact that needle cast. But again, because of our moist spring, I'm sorry to say the needle cast on the blue spruce has and I think I even heard Richard say last week on the show that he wouldn't recommend planting blue spruce because of some of that fungal problems. But yeah, Norway spruce has a really dark green color, weeping branches, mm-hmm. and they have a cone that's probably 5 to 7 inches long. It's a beautiful tree, gets 50 to 70 feet, but it likes moist, well-drained soils. Probably not a real sandy soil and not a real clay soil, but they make a beautiful windbreak tree, but they also make a beautiful ornamental kind of big tree in the front yard or backyard too.
We have some on campus. They are just great plants.
All right.
There you go.
A rousing endorsement
yes.
for the Norway spruce. All right, here's a question from Lynn in Iowa County. My peonies are covered with powdery mildew. Mm-hmm. Can I cut the plants off, or should I just leave them alone over the winter?
At this point, I would cut them off. Powdery mildew on peonies is rather odd. We didn't see this 10 or 15 years ago, but in the last few years, it's been showing up. It's becoming quite common. We have some on campus here at Iowa State. It tends to be more common on plants growing in partial shade rather than full sun. So if you have that issue, I would consider digging those up and moving those to a sunnier location. They basically need at least 6 hours of direct sun. Less than that, they tend to get the powdery mildew quite severely. It's basically aesthetic. It's not going to kill the plants, but they just don't look good. And at this point, you can cut them off, yes.
All right, and here is a question from Nancy. I have a large hydrangea bush with large blossoms that don't look so good anymore. When is the best time to cut this bush back?
I wouldn't prune the plant back at this point, but you can remove the spent flower heads if you don't like the appearance. But as far as pruning it, I'd wait till basically late winter, early spring.
All right, let's get back to the phones now. Ben in Iowa City. Hi, Ben.
Hi, yeah. Hey, about 9 years ago, I planted some elm trees in my backyard. I picked a cultivar called Princeton that was resistant to Dutch elm disease. And this spring, I noticed one of the trees, the middle part of the tree and top, wasn't leafing out as well as the other two trees I have in my backyard. And I was a little bit concerned about that, but it still seemed to be leafing out on the periphery. Yesterday I walked out and noticed that there was an area on the trunk that the bark was separating from, probably a foot and a half. And I was just curious what my next step would be.
What I would tell you to do, Ben, is write down this, vitosh at dnr.iowa.gov, and send me some pictures. Then I can see if it's trunk damage, or there could have been some early sun scald on one side of the tree or something like that. But any time that the bark is separating, that's not a good sign. Those trees, Princeton is one that's supposed to be tolerant to Dutch elm disease, but there's actually some other diseases and things that they could succumb to. But it sounds like there could have been some type of physical damage, or again, sun scald or something like that. So if you want to send me a couple pictures through email, I can take a look and we can try to figure out what might be going on.
All right. And if you missed that email address,
I didn't say it very well.
Search for Mark Vitosh and DNR and you'll find him.
Yep.
All right, Ben, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Ken in Arnold's Park. Hi, Ken.
Hi there. My question is, I have transplanted a maple tree that was growing along the foundation of my house. I had to get it away from the house. I moved it out in my yard, and it's branching out now. It's looking pretty healthy. It's branching out right from the ground level, shooting out branches. And I'm going to have to prune them off as the tree grows. What's the best time of the year to prune them that back?
I would actually wait till next summer, believe it or not. Especially with maples, we always get concerned if we cut them in the wintertime, they bleed. They're not going to bleed to death. But a lot of the new research is showing that you're going to get better response to the wounds if you actually prune them, especially on the maples, crab apples, ash, stuff like that. The oaks we still prune in the winter because of oak wilt. But with maples, I would wait till things leaf out next spring, probably mid-June, go ahead and do some pruning. The thing you want to do if you have a new tree is you want to make sure that you have one straight leader on a shade tree. And if you get two forks, you want to prune one of those off for sure. But if you have lower branches, think about what kind of clearance that you want. Do you want 6-foot clearance, 8-foot clearance, 10-foot clearance, whatever eventually? But remember that all the branches in the first 8 feet, they're not going to move. So you eventually have to, those are temporary branches that you have to take off, but we don't want you to take them off all in 1 year. You should take those branches off slowly. Let those lower branches get about an inch in diameter and get them off before they're 2 inches. So this lifting process should actually take multiple years, maybe even 5 to 10 years, where you slowly lift those up, because we all know that trees need leaves. And if we take off too many branches at one time, it really puts that tree in imbalance, and you don't get enough production, and you don't get enough food moving through the trunk, and you don't develop a strong tree. So a lot of times we've all seen these trees that get pruned up real quick, and you got this little truffula tree, looks like a palm tree kind of blowing in the wind. That's not a stable tree. So you wait and you slowly lift those up. There's a great publication from Iowa State, I think. Isn't it called Pruning Trees and Shrubs, Richard?
I believe so.
That has good pictures, and it talks about doing that over time.
All right, Ken, thank you so much for your call. Plus, you get to do the pruning in June. That's so much more pleasant than trying to get out there and prune in the middle of the winter. Here's a question from Nadine. She says, I'm the coordinator for the community gardens in Wellington Heights and Cedar Rapids. We have 13 raised beds and have never tried using a cover crop over the winter. Should we try this? And if we do, what should we plant?
Well, for this year, it's too late. So I wouldn't even try at this point. It's already basically October. So I think I would probably get rid of the plant debris as best I can. so that I'm getting rid of things that might be diseased, that I'm not harboring insects. So I would do sanitation and maybe work up the soil a little bit and leave it at that at this point, because it's really too late for a cover crop.
All right. Now, if she wanted to do a cover crop next year, when should she think about it and what should she consider?
Well, you're going to have to think maybe in August or September. Maybe annual rye, cereal rye or something of that nature would be a possibility.
All right. So something to think about for next year. Here's a question from Tim. I would like to learn how to grow trees from tree nuts. I've heard that with walnuts, to place them in water, discard the ones that float and place the nuts that sink in the soil during the winter so they freeze or are stored at a cold temperature for one season, then they should grow in the spring. Is that true? Is it also true for acorns, hickory nuts, and other tree nuts?
As Richard said earlier, everything basically needs a cold period. So like with walnuts, and we don't have as many issues on walnuts, but especially the hickory nuts and the acorns, there's a lot of different weevils that actually get into the embryo and eat away at the inner part of the seed. So basically the bad stuff floats. So you put them in a bucket of water for 24 hours and the good ones will sink, and those are the ones that you want to use. Now, if you want to experiment, we have at our state nursery, we've taken some of those bad ones, and if there's enough embryo, they'll still germinate in the following spring, but they often don't have enough energy to really keep going. Mm-hmm. There's a great publication from Iowa State, Growing Trees from Seeds, and if you Google Forestry Extension, you can go on their site and get that publication. But for most of those seeds, it's better, as Richard said, to store them outside. So in the garden or in pots, so they go through that cold stratification outside rather than trying to store them in bags and stuff in a refrigerator in the garage.
Your because, luck's going to be a lot better if you just let nature take
well,
care of it,
well, those bigger
right?
seeds respire a lot, so you get a lot of mold and different problems like that. So you're better off to have them in the ground where they're insulated and they'll do much better.
All right, let's try to get in another call here. Harry in Williamsburg. Hi, Harry.
Hi.
Quickly, what's your question?
If we've got a couple of pin oaks, and we just moved to this place a year ago, and they're, I don't know, probably, the one is probably 30 feet tall, and the leaves are always yellow, and they turn kind of brown on the edge, they kind of curl up, and I was told to give them iron. I gave them iron last summer, and we don't know what to do.
Well, they probably do have an iron deficiency, but you need to make sure that you use a form of iron called chelated iron. And there's a couple different ways that it can be applied. It can be soil applied. You can actually apply it to the leaves, or you can get somebody who can inject the tree. And with the injections, you usually only have to inject every 2 to 3 years. But that's going to be an ongoing thing. There is, again, if you Google pin oaks and iron chlorosis, Iowa State has some of their literature that talks about the condition. It's actually related to pH. Iron gets tied up in the soil, and the trees can't pick it up if the pH is too high. And it's hard to drop the pH, so we often have to use this form of chelated iron. But it's something that you would have to either use every year or every couple years, depending on the form of application that you use.
Okay. The time I use it, I was told to poke holes down in the ground around the tree about every foot apart and then pour this down.
Right. And usually that'll last, if you use that method, it usually only lasts about a year. But you should, if you're not seeing green response at all, you may want to look at using an injection. And there are arborists that can inject that, but you'd have to inject it every 2 to 3 years. So it'd be an ongoing, if you don't, and if you don't treat it, eventually those yellow leaves will start to die and decline, and parts of that tree could die and decline.
All right.
So it'll be an ongoing, every 2 to 3 years, you'll have to do some type of treatment to keep those trees green.
All right. Mark Vitosh, thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure.
DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. We're going to take the week off, next week off of Hort Day, because it's Iowa week on Talk of Iowa. Then we'll be back with Hort Day the week after that. This is Talk of Iowa.